We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there in tropical Chicago, Illinois. The one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm not bad. I had a good night's sleep. I stayed up far past my bedtime on Saturday night. I went over to a buddy's house and watched UFC 272.
Whoa! Are you getting into a little MMA?
Not especially, but no. I play tennis with this dude and he's super nice and invited me over. He had buddies over to watch the fight. Nice little cheese spread.
Okay.
Had some chocolate. Had some chips, had a beer, a beer. And I woke up Sunday morning like, ooh, I'm not in a good place. It had nothing to do with the beer, but I was worried for a moment that my extremely soft tolerance had hit me. But if you have any questions about, you know, thug nasty Bryce Mitchell, I'm right here for
you. I was going to ask, so tell me about the conversation at said MMA party. Like, what are you talking about? Did you do research before going over to your buddy's place to learn a little bit more about this? Like, we would if we were going to any other sporting event.
Not especially, but my buddy did tell me that he liked Thug Nasty from Arkansas. That was his guy. No, I knew that the headline bout, the main event, featured former good friends, and so it wasn't a title fight, so there was like bad blood on the line, but not necessarily a belt. So I knew that. Mm. You know who fought? If you want to bring it all the way back to college football, is Greg Hardy.
He's in this
Miss,
now.
Carolina Panthers. He's been fighting for a while. Pretty quickly dispatched.
Okay.
Pretty quickly dispatched by a large man from, I think, Moldova. So I don't know. I had fun. It's one of those things where I pretended, but was very agreeable. So it was like a lot of like, sure, an arm bar. Three-quarter mount. Yeah, that's what I was seeing coming as well. Yeah. So that was fine. I'm not anti-MMA. I'm not pro-MMA. I'm there for the spectacle.
There for the spectacle. Well, with that being said,
yeah,
today's show is about the spectacle that was 3-9 teams.
Yes.
In 2021, you may recall we did an episode like this a month ago. We released a show on February 10th, a la 2-10, talked about 2-10 teams. Yes, on Wednesday, it is March the 9th, 3-9. Alas, here we are. So we're going to be talking about all sorts of teams, not the least of which is Nebraska and Northwestern and Temple and New Mexico. Who doesn't want to talk about New Mexico, Dan?
Yeah. You got Miles Kendrick thoughts? Rocky Long? Roles reversed?
Big time thoughts. We're going to dive in and talk about that. We're also going to go through the news here momentarily. But before we do, don't forget this episode, all our episodes driven by our good friends over at Geico. If you like the podcast, if you're just maybe finding us for the first time, thank you so much for downloading. If you've been here a while, thank you so much for your continued support. Please do subscribe to the show. We're doing two a week in the off season. You can also rate and review wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you want more Solid Verbal, you can go on out to verballers.com. Verballers.com gives you access to all of our shows a little bit early. You get access to bonus shows. We did an off-topic show a week ago. We continue to do weekly Brew&A episodes, which are only available on Patreon. And last week, we had a rather exciting announcement about Extra Nuggets. Dan,
yeah.
Extra Nuggets is a trivia show that you are doing with our good friend Adam Amin, voice of the Bulls. Thank you very much. We're going to use that sound today, right?
To the annoying reactions. Yeah.
Calls NFL games, does baseball. Adam, you know Adam. Adam's good.
Yeah.
Good dear pal of the show. Feedback so far, I think, has been really positive, right?
Yeah, first two episodes on verballers.com, more going up this month. And yeah, it's a really fun concept, easy concept, quick show. Each episode is about 30 minutes long. And we add additional context to every correct response from Jeopardy. So if it's Mickey Mantle, if it's Orion's Belt, if it's Al Pacino, if it's the Prime Meridian, be like, hey, here's what it is. Here's something fun about it. And it just goes pretty quickly. I like it. It's fun.
It's a quick listen, a digestible podcast. You can access that and let us know what your thoughts are again over at verballers.com. And last but not least, don't forget to follow along on social media. Okay. It has been a little bit since we delved into news on the college football front.
True.
And there are a couple things that we should mention. I think news of the day is that Jaden Daniels, formerly of Arizona State, he announced his intention to transfer a couple weeks back. He has now landed at LSU with Brian Kelly. This is of particular interest to me, knowing how Mr. Kelly tends to handle seeming quarterback controversies. He's going to have one now in Baton Rouge. With Jaden Daniels coming to town, that means he's going to join a depth chart that also features Miles Brennan, Garrett Nussmeier, and the early enrollee five-star recruit, Walker Howard, Dan.
Right.
Good move, bad move. Where are you at with this? Jaden Daniels to LSU.
I mean, it's great for LSU. Not because I think he's anything crazy special, but because, well, what's your phrase? More bites at the apple, right? You got more guys competing, hopefully. I mean, so Miles Brennan coming off of a preseason-ending injury last year. Garrett Nussmeier was the future at a certain point, but he's still relatively unproven. And then you've got the future in Walker Howard. And so you've got a guy in right now, and if he's good enough to beat out, presumably, Miles Brennan, Garrett Nussmeier, then that's a good thing. That's a good thing that LSU has that quality of guy, because Jaden Daniels' ceiling is interesting. I think he's fine. Like, I'm not as high on him as I think a lot of people when he entered the portal. He was a bit careless last year. I went back and rewatched a couple of his games, and he was prone a bit to hero ball, you know, throwing away from his body, throwing across his body, trying to make plays. There were times when the announcers were especially confused why he didn't make certain throws when a play was designed for a guy running wide open down the field. And so, you know, maybe it was the architecture of the offense. Maybe it was ASU's offensive line at times and pass protection and confusion. But no, I mean, just in terms of a stopgap, you can certainly do far worse than Jaden Daniels in year one of Brian Kelly as you sort of assess what you want to do moving forward. I know LSU's offensive coordinator seems pretty well regarded. Sean McVay apparently had interest in him to take over the Rams job on some level or some assistant job there. So we'll see. So Jaden Daniels at LSU, he's betting on himself. It's a roll of the dice for him. And you're right about Brian Kelly's past with figuring out who should be playing quarterback.
Seems
like
annual
thing.
This is going to be a carnival. It is going to be a carnival. This is the real Mardi Gras, Dan.
The stakes are super low. This is not Brian Kelly in year 11 or 12. The stakes in year one, with the contract he has, with expectations in year one, there are basically no stakes right now.
No, there's no added pressure, i.e. he's not going to lose his job, right? They just committed the entire family farm to Brian Kelly, but
right.
I fully expect that this quarterback controversy is going to last all season. And if history is any guide for Brian Kelly and what we've seen in his tenure at Notre Dame, having a number of good quarterbacks on the roster, all of whom could play, all of whom the fans want to see play, he will find some way to botch this. And that doesn't mean LSU is going to have a bad offense. I'm just saying the quarterback thing will remain muddled. Just get yourself ready for it now. I'm not even saying this to be derogatory.
Right.
It will be muddled all season long. He will not commit to anybody until it seems too late. Just get ready for it.
The only reason why I would push back on that a little bit is these aren't any of his guys, right? So there's no sense of, like, Jack Cohn wasn't his guy because he didn't recruit him out of high school. He wasn't with him for years and years last year. And the same goes for all three of these guys, four of these, whatever, however many guys end up in this conversation. There's no sense of Brian Kelly has watched this guy in practice for 2 years, so he feels like he can really perform if given the opportunity. So there's a clean slate element
sure.
to having all of these guys where he hasn't sat in the living room with these guys' his parents, and he hasn't, you know, formed these preconceived notions about any of these guys over the course of many years. And so I don't know how much allure there will be for any of these guys to jump in when things are going wrong for somebody else. So we'll see. But I think the situation is pretty different from where he was at Notre Dame.
It is. I hear you. I'll believe it when I see it. So
okay.
Elsewhere, you mentioned Jack Cohn. Jack Cohn ran a 4.9 at the combine, Dan. Woo!
Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know.
It's faster than I thought he'd run.
Oh, okay.
If I'm being honest with you, the combine happened over the weekend. A bunch of just factoids, I think, for college football fans that you may or may not be interested in. The big headline from the combine was Jordan Davis from Georgia.
Oh,
Jordan Davis, 6'6", 341. Dude ran a 4.78. broad jump over 10 feet, 10 feet, 3 inches, which is believed to be a record for anybody over 300 pounds. Also had a 32-inch vert, which is just mind-blowing, those types of numbers. Anyone who tells you that athletes now aren't better than they were 5-10 years ago is out of their mind. Jordan Davis definitely giving his draft stock a bit of a boost. What else do we got here? We had some other crazy numbers. Kalen Barnes, the defensive back for Baylor, ran the second fastest 40 time ever, just a hundredth of a second behind John Ross. You'll recall he ran a 4.22 a couple years back when he left Washington. Kalen Barnes, 4.23, just blazing fast. Baylor also had Tyquan Thornton run a 4.28. He was the fastest wide receiver this cycle. All told, there were 8 receivers that ran under a 4.4. Your boy Kayvon Thibodeau ran a 4.58.
At what, 255, 254, something like that?
Yep. David Ojabo ran a 4.55, sort of the hybrid DN type from Michigan. It seems as if that gave him a needed boost to maybe get him up into the top 12. Breece Hall seemingly doing everything he can do to remain one of the top, if not the top, running back prospect, ran a 4.39, getting in under that 4.4. number. And then we had some other news. We had Kenny Pickett with, quote, historically small 8.5-inch hands, but then he threw and he looked fine and everybody stopped talking about the hands. Sam Howell looked pretty good throwing the deep ball. Folks are starting to talk themselves into Malik Willis as a top 10 pick. Same holds true for Des Ritter, not seemingly because of anything he did throwing the football, but because he ran a 4.52. We always knew he was fast. I don't know if that is going to be grounds enough to get him into the top 10. We'll cover it to the extent that we can here. But Des Ritter getting a little bit of steam. And we also found out that Derek Stingley is recovering from a Liz Frank injury. Stingley, one of those guys that I remember when he came out of high school, he kind of fell into that Adrian Peterson category of, like, if he could go right now to the NFL, teams would pick him high. And we know he's obviously very talented, but had some questions around why he didn't play more, what's going on. He's dealing with a Liz Frank injury. So claims he'll be fine by pro day, but another thing to keep your eyes on. Again, we'll try to cover this as best we can here from the college football perspective, just because it is one of those rare moments of overlap between college and pro that a lot of college fans take great pride in a guy from their school going pretty high. So we'll continue to keep an eye on this and talk to folks as we get a little bit closer to the draft. But the combine was a pretty big deal over the weekend. The only other tidbit that I have here, and it's very small and very minor, but something worth noting.
I'm ready.
They are looking at proposed rule changes with respect to targeting, as well as implementing something to try and curb what they call fake injuries.
Yeah, and they're going to ban the shift, right? They're going to ban the or is that the wrong sport?
I think you're talking about Major League Baseball, Dan.
Okay, gosh, okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, I mean, there's no real good solution here for the fake injuries thing. That starts with coaches. It's not they're not independent contractors on the field saying, they're not freelancing like, oh, I'm going to fake it. And I'm going to screw everything up for the plans of the coaches and the defensive coordinator and the rhythm of this game. I don't know. It starts with the coaches. I don't know what you do. It's a very difficult issue to solve. We've seen it allegedly across the sport. And we've also seen crowds freak out thinking that players are faking injuries when,
Iowa.
In fact, they were injuries. Are you suggesting anything untoward about the great fans of Iowa football who've had to watch Brian Ferentz offenses?
Did I say? I didn't even say
get
Iowa.
Slow
I said nothing
down.
About Iowa. Iowa Hawkeyes. Excuse me.
Yeah. I think it's going to be extremely difficult to legislate and to parse what is and isn't fake and how you keep players out. And, sometimes there are very minor injuries where somebody rolls his ankle.
Sure.
And is able to stretch it out and get loose a little while later. That's a real thing. So I don't know.
I don't know what
the right answer is.
I saw there were some quotes from David Shaw, who is involved with this, and his point, his sentiment echoes yours. There is no good way to handle this. They've kicked around something like a video review after the fact.
Right.
And then perhaps conferences or individual schools would be up to levy penalties against the player, the coach. I don't know against whom you'd be levying the penalty, but how many non-contact injuries do we see in the span of a college football season?
Yeah.
It happens every week. So
it's
just so hard to legislate that type of thing. On the targeting front, again, it's equally as difficult without taking the rule out entirely. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I saw kicked around was, again, this video review where a conference could appeal, and then some larger governing body would take a look at it. And like, say, for instance, it happened in the second half. If you appealed, perhaps you could get a suspension thrown out so that you'd have to lose a guy for the first half of the next game.
Saw that, right. Which just seems, I mean, targeting in and of itself is such a confusing kind of nonsensical, like, it's one of those rules where you're like, well, by the letter of the law, even though what you're watching doesn't necessarily, you know, resonate in your own brain as something crazy serious that, you know, so I suppose that's at least a step in the right direction. Do you have a memorable non-contact injury of your own?
Your
living? Just,
oh my gosh. Where do you want me to start?
I mean, I have one that immediately comes to mind. About 17 hours into the movie Contact, if you remember how long that movie was with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey, I got a Charlie horse in the world. You ever silently yell in the middle of a Jodie Foster sci-fi joint?
God. It hasn't happened to me recently, Dan.
Okay.
I popped a hammy one time running to first base in a softball game. The entire back of my leg turned black.
Well, that's at least running.
Yeah. It was non-contact.
Yeah, it's non-contact. That's true.
Not quite to the contact Jodie Foster level of the Charlie horse, but
yeah. So anytime I see one of those instances of, I don't know, let's call it a Missouri linebacker, let's call it a Washington State safety, just out of nowhere going down, I don't laugh because I've been there. I've been there like out of nowhere. Ha! So that resonates with me as something that could actually happen.
On that note, that's all I got for news, Dan.
Yeah, all I really care about with the combine is which large man suddenly is like the F equals MA all-star of the weekend. The force equals mass times acceleration.
Good
all-star.
Physics. Good physics.
Jordan Davis, I think The Rock tweeted out something about how crazy, exciting, and killer that is that somebody of that size can move that quickly. So I mean, we already knew Jordan Davis and who he was and who he can be. But man, that type of, and I think, I want to say our pal Bill Barnwell has some sort of formula of like who actually ran the best 40 based on force. And yeah. So I imagine Jordan Davis has to be atop that list.
All right. Well, keep it right here. We'll do our best to cover any sort of draft slash college related stuff moving forward.
Yes.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Shall we get into the 3-9 game, Dan?
Nine, yes, absolutely.
What is a 3-9 game? Explain this for everybody.
It's about to be March 9th, or is March 9th when you're listening to this, or was recently March 9th, 3-9 when you're listening to this. So we're just going to go and take a snapshot. It's not necessarily a season recap. It's not a season preview of 2022. It's not a spring preview. It's just a, where is this team now based on a number of factors? Where is this program now based on a number of factors after going 3-9 in 2022? So these are, of course, non-bowl teams, some of which have hired new coaches or have made coaching changes or have hit the portal especially hard. So I wanted to check in on the current 3-9 programs with hopes that they will soon be, I don't know, 5-7 programs. And maybe next May 7th we'll be talking about them. 6-6 bowl programs. Looking at the odds of improvement, I'm going to give you a factoid about each of these teams. You're going to try and guess which of these teams I'm talking about, and we'll go from there.
Let's do the first factoid first team, Dan.
All right. This team had awesome, awesome twins.
Twins?
Not twins. Sorry. This team had awesome brothers.
Brothers.
Arguably the best player on each side of the ball had the same last name, and they were brothers, and still are.
All right. Well, before we go any further, we should at least give a list of the teams, right? We should do
that. Oh, you want to do the full list? Okay.
Here's the full list. Georgia Tech, Nebraska, not alphabetical order.
No.
Could be. Stanford, Northwestern, Duke, Colorado State, Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech, Temple, Georgia Southern, Ohio, and New Mexico. Yeah. Team we mentioned earlier.
Each side of the ball, the best player was arguably, you know, two family members.
I don't know the answer to this. Northwestern.
The McBride brothers were starting with America's team, Colorado State.
Oh.
Trey and Toby McBride. Trey is, I think, a relatively high-end NFL draft prospect. Toby McBride, really strong up front for the Rams in a very strange year. You know, Steve Adazio probably should never have been the coach for Colorado State. Jay Norvell is in. A bunch of transfers from Nevada come in, including Matt Mummy, son of Hal, the offensive coordinator now at Colorado State, was at Nevada. Colorado State lost their final six. They somehow were the only non-UConn team to lose to Vanderbilt last year. Their class was decent in this recruiting class. You know, not a lot of time, obviously, for Jay Norvell to put together a class. They threw the ball decently enough. They had an awesome pass rush. Their pass defense was largely excellent. Their defense overall was fine, but just too many turnovers, couldn't run the ball, couldn't stay on the field on offense, and that is the Ram recipe to lose a bunch of games, and that's what they did.
3-9, their second order wins count, which I like to look at, was 5.6. The only other team on our list that had a higher second order wins number was Nebraska, because Nebraska had all the one score losses.
Right.
9 1 score losses, whatever crazy stat that was. But seemingly, this would indicate to me that Colorado State wasn't nearly as bad as the record. When you compare what the Rams looked like this year versus what they looked like last year, for whatever that's worth, they only played 4 games last year because of COVID. Yeah. But seemingly, per SP Plus, they improved across the board ever so marginally.
Yep.
The offense got a little bit better. The defense got a little bit better. So this was a team that seemed to be headed in the right direction. But as you said, inconsistency is what got him. And the Steve Adazio thing, as you said, didn't make sense. I'm excited to see what Jay Norvell can do, because we talked about this when they first made the move. But Colorado State, unlike a lot of schools in maybe that like group of five tier, Colorado State invests in the football program. They care about the football program.
Yeah.
If Great you're wondering,
stadium.
Why is Jay Norvell going from Nevada to Colorado State? It's a bigger budget program. And so what can a guy like Jay Norvell do? Jay Norvell, very highly thought of in the coaching world. So while this isn't necessarily a preview of what's to come in 2022, I am very excited to see what he can do moving on to a place that's got, more of a commitment towards the football program.
Absolutely. And we're this close to beating Mountain West champs Utah State.
Correct.
So that's, you know, I would be optimistic big picture about Colorado State and Fort Collins, which I did look it up. Some decent eating options in Fort Collins. So I'd happily find myself going to a Ram game. That's all.
Next one. Next team.
All right. Next team is a team that has, or at least had last year, its own version at wide receiver of Harris Ranch. Two Harrises, Harai. So not Najee, not Najee and Damian Harris, but Smoke and Trey. Smoke and Trey Harris.
Smoke and Trey Harris.
And this program has a new coach.
And the program has a new coach.
Yeah.
Boy. I probably should have done more. Is this Duke?
Is Duke a 3-9 team? Yeah, they were a 3-9 team. No, it's not Duke. It's Louisiana Tech.
God. 0-2.
We're going to get to some of the bigger schools in a moment.
0-2.
Louisiana Tech, they lose future Notre Dame head coach Skip Holtz. They add Sonny Cumbie. Assistants have a heavy Texas flavor, which is to be expected given Sonny Cumbie's background. They had a decent passing attack last year with Austin Kendall, who's no longer there. Matthew Downing on his third school now and goes back to TCU with Sonny Cumbie. He comes in. Right. They are at Missouri, at Clemson, which is tricky for year one of a new head coach of a non-conference slate. And the only other like kind of fun factoid I found about Louisiana Tech, which, look, they have a long ways to go, but this is not a disaster. It's a decent state, actually a very good state for talent, so they can rebuild relatively quickly. We've seen some really fun Louisiana Tech offenses in the last, you know, decade and a half, whatever. The big thing is their new offensive coordinator comes over from Navarro College in Texas. Former head coach at Navarro College, home to the Netflix show Cheer.
Hey.
So there's that. I don't know. Louisiana Tech. So they, they're 2021. There are reasons coaches leave. There are reasons why, and that reason is it looks like they lost 7 of 8 Louisiana Tech last year to finish off the season with their only win over a not so good Charlotte team. The thing I can say is this team fought pretty hard. This wasn't a bunch of 41-14 losses. They were scoring points. They were competitive, and it just wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough for Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, last season, 2020,
yeah,
not 2021, I guess 2 seasons ago now, Second order wins 2.7, yet their final record was 5-5. So that indicates to me this is a team that had some fight. I think you're right about that. On the whole, though, marginally better, got a little bit better on offense, a little bit worse on defense. So kind of stuck in the mud a little bit. 3.8 second order wins, pretty much right on the number. So maybe a little bit unlucky, but by and large, the numbers say this is a 3-win team, and indeed they were 3-9. So I love when you bring over the coach from a really small college. I love that unknown factor. You know, it worked out really well for Western Kentucky with Zach Kittley last year, right? Bringing him up from Houston Baptist. Yep. We'll see what he could do at Texas Tech, but I generally love that formula. It at least gives me a little nugget to root for.
Nuggets.
Yeah.
Next team, a 3-9 program. Who is playing two 2021 3-9 programs? So two other teams on this list in the first few weeks of 2022.
Really?
I can tell you the opponents if you're interested. They're playing Northwestern and Georgia Southern in 2022. This
playing,
3-9
Northwestern
team.
And Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
Got to be Duke, right?
Nebraska. Nebraska.
I'm 0-3 in this game.
Be more thorough, Ty.
Look, you saw the table that I put here. I've been very thorough. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There's exactly 12 teams.
Right.
I might go 3-9 in this trivia game.
That's okay.
Damn it.
The thing is about Nebraska is they're like the second order win all-star squad of this list of teams. That's been like the second, you know, Bill Connolly has been like, look, Nebraska went 3-9, but it was so difficult for them to go 3-9 with how well they mostly played. I saw another thing where Andy Staples wrote about how, and he spoke to somebody who ran a bunch of models and simulated Nebraska's season given their statistical footprint, and said if Nebraska played the season 1,000 times, they would mostly go 6-6. And it was like unheard of. The least likely outcome of 1,000 simulations of Nebraska's season was going 3-9. My counter is they did a lot of things that 3-9 teams do. Whether it was the special teams, whether it was the offensive line play, whether it was the lack of a pass rush, whether it was giving up some big plays, whether it was some really bad high leverage moment decision making, Nebraska, for long stretches, did also look like a 3-9 team.
Whenever I'm about to do something, I think, would a 3-9 team do that? And if they would, I do not do that thing.
See? That's just good logic from Dwight Schrute. Possibly edited. So, Nebraska had really interesting moments last year. They made really interesting plays. They had really good players on all three levels of their defense at times. But they also would go entire halves without scoring. They would also, like, they were just things where you could understand some of the results. 3-9 may have been an extreme in terms of how that season played out, with how competitive they were against the best teams on their schedule. But still, there were worrisome chunks of the 2021 Nebraska experience. And they made a bunch of wholesale changes. So they're approaching things in a serious way. What is your opinion of where Nebraska was, is, and can be?
Yeah, I mean, the only teams they beat were Fordham, Buffalo, and Northwestern. And you don't get paid based on close calls.
Correct.
It's a results-based industry.
Mm-hmm.
So in looking back at Nebraska, if we compare 21 to 20, Nebraska, about the same. The results last year in an abbreviated season, I think were a little bit more in line with that statistical footprint. As you said,
right.
Second order wins here off the charts.
Yeah.
Second order wins has them as a 6-6 team. But 37th overall in the SP Plus, 33rd best offense, 28th best defense. So that in and of itself is not really the hallmark of a 3-9 team. And it definitely indicates that there are some underlying things that are causing that.
Right.
Inconsistency, I think, is the big one across the board on offense, on defense, right? Many weeks where you couldn't really put your finger on it. And I think that's the frustration for Nebraska fans now as they look ahead. Like, the team wasn't horrible last year. It was decent at times. It just wasn't decent enough when it really counted, and that's why they lost 9 times. So,
counterpoint, they were horrible to their own fans. They were a horrible experience to watch as a Husker fan, I'm positive.
I just wonder, you know, I mean, everybody's going to go into the season with Scott Frost on the hot seat.
Of course.
It's just an inevitability at this point. I go back and forth on whether or not it was smart to retain him for another year.
Well, whatever his, I'm sure there were elements beyond like, is Nebraska good or not? But yeah, continue.
Right. Your point all along has been the reason they retained him is because no one else that they wanted the job. That they asked around and they couldn't find anybody else.
Yeah.
So I think there's probably an element of it, but you know, I think we've gotten to the point now where we're going to ask the same questions about Scott Frost that we've been asking for years on end now about Clay Helton. How many games does he need to win in order to retain that job? In looking at the schedule, it is fairly workable. It is not a bad schedule.
Yeah, I mean, after last year's nightmare of a schedule, just at least heading into the season, what it appeared to be, yeah.
They had the fifth hardest schedule last year. This year, I don't know what the numbers look like. I'm sure somebody's run them. They've got Oklahoma at home at the end of September, which is probably going to be a bloodbath of sorts. But beyond that, it seems pretty workable to me.
Wait, why do you think the Oklahoma game will be a bloodbath?
I don't know. I think
I love that phrase. And then the follow up. Okay, continue.
Maybe I'm just being a little bit biased against Nebraska, but
yeah,
I guess the game's at home. It's in Lincoln.
What the hell do we know about what Oklahoma's going to look like?
All right.
Okay. I just wanted to know.
There'll be a healthy dog in that game.
Okay.
They should be a healthy dog in that game.
Fair enough. Okay. So your opinion right now. So they make the changes that they make. They bring in Chuba Purdy and Casey Thompson. Mark Whipple's now running the offense. They hire a new receivers coach. I think it's Mickey Joseph from LSU. They hit the portal reasonably hard. They lose key guys, of course, Adrian Martinez to Kansas State. Like, do you feel like Nebraska from afar has patched up holes, has done enough to say, okay, I could see them, you know, not making the freak mistakes? You know, they hire a full-time special teams coordinator, and that was a major weakness last year. Have they done enough to, and I don't know what that number is, and I don't know what the competitive nature of Nebraska has to be for Scott Frost to keep his job, but are you, if you're a Nebraska fan, are you reasonably happy with the job Scott Frost has done to try and make things right from a sort of administrative roster and coaching staff perspective?
Reasonably so, yeah. He's kicked up enough dust that even if he hasn't, it's had a nice distracting effect.
Sure.
But I think the quarterback thing is important. I'm very curious to see how he handles the quarterback position. Adrian Martinez, they tried to build the whole plane out of Adrian Martinez, and he just wasn't that guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't that guy.
Right.
I think Casey Thompson's a better passer for sure. I know he's mobile. We saw him at Texas. He can be mobile, but he's a different kind of player. And so,
I don't even know if that's true, but yeah, okay, continue. That's your opinion. Go for it.
Right. He's not a runner, but he can move in the pocket. I just feel like the type of system that Frost wants to run is probably a better fit for a guy like a Casey Thompson than somebody like an Adrian Martinez.
Yeah.
And so I think in that sense alone, I feel pretty optimistic about where this could head. But, you know, then you start diving into like, all right, why are the weapons out? Why can they support a quarterback? Like, that's a far more nuanced discussion, but I think on the surface level, to the extent that we can diagnose it here, I feel okay about it.
Yeah, it was, my question is, you know, is this fully Mark Whipple's offense? Is this still Scott? When you have somebody who's had those types of fingerprints on an offense and quarterback preparation or quarterback teaching where Adrian Martinez is throwing 4 picks against Purdue is, you know, making it look, there are freak fumble opportunities. They're freak, you know, not going for fourth down or fourth down calls. It's just, is Nebraska a team with a coaching staff ready to prepare an offense to win moments against equal or even slightly better teams? And maybe the addition of Whipple is some sort of advantage, but man, I don't know. It all feels a little bit too little, too late to me.
All right, next team.
Okay. This next team probably had the most precipitous fall on one side of the ball. I use the points per drive metric, but you can use whatever metric you want on offense or defense of any of these teams.
It's got to be Northwestern's defense, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They were first in 2020, if you remember how well they played against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. They win the Big Ten West. They completely silence basically everybody that they play on defense. And they fell from number one in the nation in 2020 to 98th. That is, as far as I can tell, as dramatic as it got in terms of 2020 to 2021. Obviously, the context of the 2020 season is part of things here. But Mike Hankwitz retires as Northwestern's longtime uber successful defensive coordinator. They bring in Jim O'Neill, who didn't seem to be a guy with the most accolades, but that's who they bring in. They have this the revolving door at quarterback continues. You know, Hunter Johnson a couple of years prior is there. He has since now gone back to Clemson. Ryan Helinski supposedly is a guy who came in to stabilize things after Peyton Ramsey. That doesn't really work out at all. They have opportunities at times to win interesting games. You know, the Iowa game is one that comes to mind where they're driving with about 2 minutes left to win that game and immediately throw an interception.
Yeah.
There were pieces on this defense. You know, Chris Bergen, there was, you know, the Bergen brothers were longtime Northwestern stalwarts as playmakers, was a walk-on. Brandon Joseph opts to transfer. He was a freshman All-American. He's at Notre Dame, right?
Notre Dame,
that's Marcus Freeman brings him over to solidify that secondary that lost Kyle Hamilton. So Northwestern's defense, just especially up front, especially getting after the passer, especially running that really tight zone that they've run for the past few years, just fully fell off a cliff. Evan Hull stepped up on offense. He was a bright spot at running back. But, man, this Northwestern team, which had largely gotten the Big West and its own fans used to competing on an interesting level more often than not, just turned in another nightmare of a season.
It was bad. The defensive fall off was very precipitous.
Yeah.
And that's not doing the team any favors, if only because the offense is always in a spot where we're questioning where the point's coming from. Yeah. When was the last time we talked about a Northwestern offense as electric? I'll wait.
It's been... I mean, there were Clayton Thorson moments, but not a full year of electricity, just sparks.
And that's fine, right? That's okay. You can win like that, but it is contingent on you having a decent defense. And they just didn't have that last year. Per the SP Plus, they went from third to 72nd.
Yeah.
The team as a whole, because of that, dropped from 30th in the SP Plus all the way down to 106.
Right.
Mostly because of the defense. They went 7-2 in 2020, 3-9, obviously, this past year. So moving forward, I think a lot of what you mentioned in play here, right? There are pieces on the defense that are going to need to be replaced on top of the fact that they need to figure out a way to get better on defense. Mm-hmm. Whatever they tried last year did not help. On offense, they bring a lot back. So hopefully that side of the ball improves, but to go from 118th up doesn't really require a whole lot. It just requires a little bit more competence. So I expect they'll get better. It's just a matter of can they get better enough to pick up the slack for the defense, wherever that ends up. And then on top of it, they get both Penn State and Ohio State from the East in some of their cross-divisional games, which is about as bad as you can do.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Like, I know there's no rush to fire Pat Fitzgerald. I don't expect they ever will. But on some level, if you don't see the improvement, you got to ask the question, what's the plan here? What's the plan here? Another bad defensive effort in 2022 could be a real deal breaker there. I don't know.
A couple points here is, one, I think you undersold how good a defense needs to be with an offense that's been so woefully ineffective.
It's the half team thing.
Northwestern's defense, they need to be great every year to hold up their end of the bargain and win 6 to 10 games.
Here's a factoid for you about the Northwestern offense. I looked this one up before.
Please.
Northwestern had no quarterback on the roster throw for more touchdowns and interceptions. The best that they did was Andrew Marty.
Yeah.
he went 6-6. Six touchdowns, six interceptions. Yeah. But Ryan Helinski, 3 touchdowns, 4 picks. Hunter Johnson, in the limited action he saw, 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I could dive in more on the quarterback stats. You don't want me to. But let's just leave it there that they just didn't get anything on the quarterback front. Evan Hall, like you said, bright spot. Evan Hall had a nice year. But beyond that, just not much in the passing game.
The other thing I would add, just because we have Stanford, Northwestern, Duke on this list. We talked about Vandy last time. Is in this current era, this transfer portal era, this movement across the sport in ways unlike what we've ever seen, is going to put these more rigorous academic programs at a pretty big disadvantage. Just because the barrier for entry academically for these schools makes it nearly impossible. I know Stanford picked up a transfer. I don't know what Northwestern, they didn't hit the portal especially hard this year, right? And so Pat Fitzgerald runs this program out of, and at times really successfully, a sense of loyalty for his assistant coaches and his coordinators. Like, how long was Northwestern running a, at best, underwhelming offense? He just was extremely loyal to the offensive side of the ball there. And so if you're not able to make wholesale changes to improve your team because of that sense of loyalty, because of the academic restrictions, or it's not, you know, restriction, obviously, it's just, it's going to be tricky. It's trickier. It's going to be a smaller pool of guys who are able to come to your school for an immediate infusion of talent and improvement. And so it's just Northwestern, the margin for error of high school evaluation has to be so much better than everybody else. And that same goes for Stanford, Duke, Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech. That's another one of those teams. You know, it's just more difficult and more difficult than ever.
All right. Next team.
All right. I'm pulling up the list right now. This team went 2-10 against the spread and didn't score more than 14 points after October 2nd.
Is that a real stat?
That's a real stat. They did not score more than 14 points in a game after October 2nd, a date in which they had a decent but not huge-sized upset. October 2nd was a decent-sized upset, and they did not score that more than 14 points from that point thereafter.
Wow. I don't think it's Duke, because I can't think of an upset that Duke was part of. And I don't think it was Georgia Tech or Stanford.
No. Stanford had a big upset, but no. They scored a little bit more than that in some of those games.
I'll say, gosh, let's go Georgia Southern.
Temple.
Ah!
So Temple beats Memphis on October 2nd.
Right.
Temple beats Memphis. Rod Carey no longer the head coach of the Owls. They hire Stan Drayton. He was at Texas, but he's been, you know, NFL. He's been around, and I think pretty highly regarded. Hire Stan Drayton, who has, you know, background as a running backs coach, to take over the program. Temple was just full on bad. They bring in Dwan Mathis from Georgia as a transfer. He enters the portal, but then has since decided to return. It's going to be a complete overhaul. It's going to take time at Temple. They just didn't do much well last year, and they're one of the aside from being bad as the primary reason and being bad consistently, you can keep your job if you're somebody like Scott Frost when there's hope, when there's reason to say, okay, we lost these games but it was close and the results didn't really match with the performance, of which there were a lot of good performances for Nebraska. They just came up short in big moments. Temple was just kind of bad at everything. Their pass defense was okay at times, but still gave up too many big plays. Just bad. Just not a good team, and didn't recruit especially well. I don't know. The hope is that Temple has been a place where coaches can succeed. Philadelphia is not the middle of nowhere. You can get players from the Northeast. There is football culture in the Northeast, not what it is in the Midwest or the South. But with what Al Golden and then Matt Rhule and kind of Steve Adazio were able to do, you can go to bowl games as a Temple Owl. And It's going to be recruiting. It's going to be evaluation. It's going to be getting lucky with other teams in the conference. But that's where Temple sits right now.
Temple's hired really well in the past.
Yeah.
They've got a track record for hiring. Just not this time. It didn't really work out. And so to go a different direction, Stan Drayton, whom I had never heard of before, I must admit.
Yeah.
Never heard of the guy. But the writing was on the wall that they were going to go in a different direction before last season, even before what we saw in 2021 happened. This is a team that was 1-6 in 2020. Abbreviated schedule. All the numbers lined up with a 1-6 team.
Right.
And again, this past year, they got worse pretty much across the board. And the numbers line up. The fact that they got the 3-9, I think, is sort of an accomplishment. So the writing was on the wall. It made sense. I echo your sentiment. It is a place where coaches have succeeded in the past. You can succeed at Temple.
They hadn't fired a coach since 1992.
They've hired really well. It is just a place, as you said, that may not necessarily have that football culture like you'd find in State College, Pennsylvania, right? Everybody in Philly cares about the Eagles. They care about Temple when they're on ABC.
I was just going to say there are enough programs in the area.
Sure.
In the portal era between Penn State and Syracuse and Boston College and Pitt. Like, there are enough places where Temple is a, and like, they've had good dudes drafted.
Oh my God.
Hassan Reddick, who was the recent edge guy? Like, they've had guys. So, like, if Stan Drayton is that guy, if he hires well, if he, proves to have hired well, if he recruits well enough and, you know, sets up Temple as a destination, it's an interesting place.
No, I'm with you. I'll remain optimistic. This is a program that's had some success.
And who knows? The Manny Diaz era. Like, who knows what that could have been?
The Manny Diaz era. Wow.
Yeah.
Lasted all of like 48 hours, 2 weeks.
Lasted all of 48 hours. I didn't pull up Temple's 2022 schedule. I'm not that concerned about it. You ready for the next team?
Let's do it again. So I am 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm 1-4 in guessing these teams.
Okay. This team's offense was historically bad and clearly the worst in America in 2021.
Got to be New Mexico, right?
It was New Mexico. Yeah.
Play the sound. Play that sound, please. Thank you.
The defense wasn't great, but there is reason to believe now with Danny Gonzalez and Rocky Long switching. Danny Gonzalez played for Rocky Long at New Mexico, coached for him at San Diego State. Rocky Long, if you remember, was flirting with just leaving the head coaching job to, you know, talk to like Syracuse and his former assistant there. Or spoke with Syracuse just in general about becoming their defensive coordinator as an active head coach at San Diego State. He took over the defense at New Mexico, and they made plays. You know, that 3-3-5 defense is always going to be tricky, and he was actually good as a head coach at New Mexico. They went to a bowl game, I want to say, in like 5 of 6 years in the early to mid 2000s, the Lobos did. It's an uphill battle. It's not, you know, a state that produces a ton of talent. They're going to have to lean on Texas, lean on California a good amount. And just, I don't know enough about the program, and I don't know enough about the program as a destination, but you're not going to attract a ton of names to go to the land of enchantment. So we'll see. We know that their ceiling, I think Bob Davey took them to a bowl or two. Mike Locksley was a complete nightmare and disaster as a head coach there. We'll see is the best that I can offer. They haven't recruited especially well. I mentioned at the top, Miles Kendrick, the quarterback transfer from Kansas, ended up as a Lobo. But they lost a ton in the portal, which is worrisome that this is not necessarily going to work out in the long term. But it could have just been holdovers from the previous era. It's not a place like even Temple or some of these other schools where you can envision, because of the local talent and because it appearing as a transfer destination, that they could become a bowl team in a year or two. It's hard to see with New Mexico. I think that's
dream
my broader point.
Dream style stadium. I'm going a different direction. I have nothing productive to say about New Mexico.
Okay.
Dream style stadium, which is where they play.
Yeah.
Capacity about 45,000, I believe.
That's good.
Dream style stadium has hosted two very famous artists, musicians, groups.
Okay.
In his past.
I was going to say Georgia O'Keeffe. No,
different. No still life here. This is in the 90s. mid to late 90s, two acts in particular move through Dream Style Stadium. Can you name one of the two?
Does it align with the fact that it's in New Mexico, or is it just random? Is it, are you just going to say Eiffel 65 or something?
They're, definitely more well-known than Eiffel 65. Two prominent acts, mid to late 90s.
Mid to late 90s. Did Sheryl Crow pass through Dream Style Stadium?
Sheryl Crow did.
What?
As an opening act for somebody else. But Sheryl Crow was part of the Bridges to Babylon tour. Thank you. Play that for
That's
yourself.
That's what, the Stones?
That was the Stones in 97. Wow.
Okay, I just, there's something very Southwestern about Sheryl Crow vibes.
Sheryl Crow.
Soaking up the sun.
October 30th, 1997, she was the opening act for the Stones. The other one in the 90s, I'm sure there were more, but the other more prominent one in the 90s, 1994, August the 2nd, Metallica. Metallica.
Wow, that's super prominent. Yeah. Stones and Metallica coming into the Dream Style, whatever it was called back then. But
yeah.
Sheryl Crow, out of nowhere. I could have picked anybody. You're watching my eyes. You're here. I'm not tapping. I'm not doing anything.
No.
Wow.
Boom. Look, there's a nugget for you.
I love that. Thank you very much.
Next
that.
Topic.
This team, despite being pretty competitive in their losses, finished 2022's class. So the recruiting class with the worst in its conference.
Is this a Power Five team? You just give me
no,
a
hint. It is not. It is not.
Man. Ohio. I don't know.
It is Ohio.
Boom.
It is.
Play it.
Look at you.
Look at me. Let's go.
Fire. They moved the ball. This is another Rourke, not Nathan. I think it was Curtis Rourke. They moved the ball decently enough on the ground. Armani Rogers, the UNLV transfer, came in as sort of a dual threat role. Couldn't really pass. so sort of a mono threat. They could run the ball, and they just couldn't finish drives worth anything. They could not get in the end zone at all. They would move it and just stop it. And so that's where the Bobcats really suffered. And then they couldn't recruit Tim Albin in his first year. Frank Solich retires relatively close to the season. So there was that weird, you know, and that's going to happen in year one in the recruiting cycle, where you're not just not given time to help form and generate relationships with high school coaches and classes. But Miami of Ohio was a pretty good win. And to their credit, they were, once again, competitive in those losses, which, all things considered, better to be competitive than not. So Ohio is a place that has, I mean, Frank Solich won a ton of games in Athens. And I don't know. I'm optimistic that Ohio can get back to that point, because the MAC seems as open as ever. But the identity shift and the coaching and the high leverage moments, it's just going to need to get way better.
Did you know that the Bobcat is a species that is native to Ohio?
I did not know that.
It is one of seven wildcat species that is found in North America.
Okay. What are the others?
I don't know what the others are.
Whatever you're on Wikipedia.
No, I'm getting this from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. I don't do Wikipedia. You know that.
I know Athens, Ohio.
I'm much
Ohio.
More thorough than Wikipedia, Dan. Come on.
Athens has been on a lot of lists. Athens, Ohio, not Athens, Georgia. Athens, Ohio has been on a lot of best college town lists. So there must be something correlated to the fact that Ohio has been able to attract winning football players and be located in a desirable place to go to school. So, yeah, Ohio is in a kind of a deep funk right now, but we'll see. We'll see. Next team, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
This team looks to be starting a transfer quarterback who would be playing in games in his sixth year. He has played in games in five straight years and presumably will be playing in a sixth straight season. Now, he had injuries, so he only played a game or two in some of those years, but was a three-year starter at his previous place. Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I don't know the answer again.
His coach is not easily recognizable in a Hudson News.
Oh, Georgia Southern.
Yes, correct. Kyle Van Trees. He'll be playing. He transfers in from Buffalo.
Oh my gosh.
He had thrown balls in five consecutive seasons for the Bulls.
There's a Forrest Gump quality there where you're going to go back through the archives and just find him in black and white photos, like at prominent games. What's Van Trees doing here? Okay.
He started college in 2017, goes now to Statesboro and plays for Georgia Southern, and we'll see what happens for Georgia Southern. They lost 6 of 7 to end their season. They hire Clay Helton. By the way, their new defensive coordinator is Will Harris, who was the corners coach at Washington. An awesome corner for USC. So you have the USC connection at Georgia Southern. They didn't hit the portal especially hard, but to me, it's a place you can win. Local talent is there. The conference becomes a lot trickier with the additions on the other side.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
Georgia Southern, interesting.
They were an 8-win program in 2020. They were pretty good. They were 8-5. The defense was not bad in 2020. No. It was a top 50 defense, but that bottomed out. It all sort of bottomed out. This past season, that was the issue. Defense went from 46th all the way down to 110.
Yeah.
And I think based largely on that drop off, that's how you go from 71st overall in SP Plus all the way down to 117. Second order wins count for Georgia Southern, 3.0, right on the nose. So we'll see what Clay Helton can do. That'll be an interesting story to follow.
As I mentioned, they're playing Nebraska at Nebraska, and Georgia Southern, just to correct myself, they are in the Sun Belt East, the proposed hypothetical Sun Belt East with the new additions. So
correct.
A bit trickier of a division, but I don't know. I'm reasonably optimistic with Georgia Southern. I don't know.
All right.
Next team. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So who do we have left?
We've got not that many Southern teams. Miss, Duke, Stanford, and Georgia Tech.
This team has wall-to-wall murderers on their schedule. It doesn't seem like their coach is long for this place.
You've got to be referring to Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, right?
I am.
Yeah. Play the sound. I need the sound. Thank you. Thank you for the
sound.
They
finished their season last year losing 100-0. At Notre Dame and against Georgia. Having Georgia as an annual rivalry non-conference is perhaps, I mean, there's a case for South Carolina. There's a case for, I don't know, Florida or Florida State. One of the more disadvantaged situations, given your own program and its own limitations. It's probably the worst.
Can I read the schedule off? Can I read this?
I would both love to and hate to hear it.
Open up the year, Labor Day weekend, the Monday night game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, quote-unquote neutral site.
De facto home!
Quote-unquote neutral site.
Somebody easy, probably?
Quote-unquote neutral site, but Clemson. Clemson comes to town, to Atlanta. They've got Ole Miss at home. They go to UCF, to Pitt. They are on the road again later in the year at Florida State and at Virginia Tech on back-to-back weeks, followed up by a home game against Miami, resurgent Miami, maybe we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina on the road. Who knows what that's going to be? And then they close out the year on the road at Georgia. Brutal. Brutal. Looking at that count right there, Clemson, probably a loss. Ole Miss, I'm assuming, probably a loss.
Yeah.
Florida State, I'll take some liberties and say that's probably a loss. Virginia Tech, probably a loss.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Virginia Tech's first year coach. We'll see what they
Georgia definitely a loss. So right out of the chute, you're looking at, I think, at least 4 or 5 losses.
Georgia Tech probably needs to go to a bowl game this year for Jeff Collins to keep his job, which means they will need to beat first year coach at Virginia, first year coach at Virginia Tech. They get Miami at home with a first-year coach. They probably need to win that game. They got North Carolina with changes on defense, with change at quarterback. They probably and Western Carolina, and then you got to win at the bounce house at UCF. You got to win at Pitt. Now it's, you know, new offense-ish at Pitt, new quarterback, new coordinator. But they're going to have to shock and surprise. They lose their best offensive player to Alabama and Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yeah, that's
just demolished in the portal, Georgia Tech.
Kills them.
They hire Chip Long to take over the offense, which, say what you will, he is at least somebody who will stay. Like, he stabilized Notre Dame's offense when they needed it.
Sure.
They got a lot better in the red zone. So whatever Georgia Tech season looks like, it won't be because of an offense without a vision per se. They might not have the talent. They, you know, quarterback will, it's still a work in progress with Jeff Sims. I just, it's hard to see it ending, all ending in a bowl game for the rambling wreck at this point.
I really want Georgia Tech to be better. I really, really want Georgia Tech to be better.
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think football's more interesting, especially in the ACC, if you've got a competent Georgia Tech. And I think the one thing that has been consistent throughout the time that Jeff Collins has been there, we know he's all in on Atlanta. He's trying to sell that hard. The team seemingly plays pretty hard for him. It's just hard with the schedule, man. It's so hard. It is so hard to get ahead with a schedule like this. This is a team that if you look at what happened from 2020, mm-hmm. where they played 10 games, they went 3-7, 2020. Mm-hmm. 2021, 3-9, obviously. 96th in SP+. So slipped by about 20 spots. Offense marginally worse. Defense a lot worse. Defense slipped by a pretty drastic number. So you factor in the brutal schedule. I don't know, man. I'm not too optimistic that it's getting much, much better. Even that a bowl game is on the table. There's so many landmines here in the schedule that unless they have kind of like a South Carolina-esque season where they find ways to scrape and claw and get six wins. I don't know. Like, I just don't see it.
I'm just curious because this whole time you've been talking, I'm just racking my brain. You did nothing but disrespect Paul Johnson and the Georgia Tech success that he had there because you disrespected the triple basically
right.
the entire time. You didn't take it seriously, and that's why you were sent what did I send you? An Orange Bowl champion hat? Georgia Tech Orange Bowl
you
champion
did,
hat when
send
they beat
it to
Mississippi
me.
State?
It's somewhere around here, yeah.
So you do nothing but disrespect Georgia Tech during that time.
Correct. That's correct.
And when Georgia Tech was succeeding before then, it was like the Reggie Ball unwatchable. Like, when is it that Georgia Tech has made college football better? Like, of all the teams, like, you can make that point about Texas or Nebraska or Miami because there's something, like, there's branding, there's style. I just don't understand. Like, to me, college football has always been better when Georgia Tech has been bad. Like, because it's come at the expense of other more fun programs with better environments. And now I understand that, like, it would be a cool story if, like, a local Atlanta team, which, by the way, recently discovered that Atlanta's pronounced basically with two N's at the end of the word, like Toronto.
Atlanta. Yeah.
There's never really been that much flash to Georgia Tech football that has really, like, held up a side of the sport to me.
Well, I mean, it's a historic program, and it's in a great football city in Atlanta.
I hear you.
So, for my money, even though we don't got a whole lot to go on recently, it would be cool to have a program in Atlanta, other than Georgia, which is over in Athens, be prominent in the ACC. The ACC's gettable. Like, it's there, man. It's gettable. It's always in a bit of a tizzy. Especially now with who knows what's going on with Clemson. Like, there's a lot of intrigue, I think, as to the direction of that conference. So I don't think it's happening for Georgia Tech, but I think with that being said, historic program. You know, Bobby Dodd Stadium is the oldest stadium in college football.
I did not know that.
Did you know underneath the West stands are the old West stands? It's like a hidden cavern.
Is that true? There's a little cave cavern?
100% true. You can go down there and still see parts of the old stadium. There's so much history at Georgia Tech, not just with the stadium, but with the program, that I would really love to see them rise to prominence. I just don't see it happening. It's unfortunately not going to happen for Jeff Collins.
All right.
Not in 2022.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm good with it happening, but it doesn't really register with me. I remember driving through Atlanta once and somebody was like, oh, there's Bobby Dodd. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Usually when you drive through somewhere and you're like, oh, there's the stadium. Wow. You're driving on I-35 or whatever in Austin. You're like, yep, there's DKR. Pretty cool. Kind of different. All right. Next school. Who do we even have left? Okay. This team was pretty awful and finished with the number one recruiting class in its conference.
Southern Miss.
Stanford.
Stanford finished with the top recruiting class in the
Stanford,
Pac-12.
Stanford, yes. So
really?
Yes. So you have USC with the coaching change. You have Oregon with the coaching change. You have Washington with the coaching change. And so even though those schools salvaged classes to whatever extent, they were not large classes. Stanford did pretty well, especially along the lines. They recruit nationally. I think they finished something like 18th in the country, which was good for number one in a very much changing Pac-12 at the top. So Stanford, yeah, they go 3-9 and finish with the number one recruiting class in the Pac-12.
All right, let me ask you a question. Realistic Please. Question. Would Stanford okay. ever move on from David Shaw?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would take probably another couple of down years, but he's making something. Remember when the USA Today released there, or there was some story that came out that finally released what he is making, because it's harder to get the figures from coaches at private schools. He's made like $9 million a year, like high eights, low nines, something in that range. And I just don't think you can justify paying those, that kind of number to somebody going 3-9, 4-8, 2-10 over, you know, a 3-4 year span. So I could see it. It's probably going to take more because I think he is so beloved there. Then
yeah, that's
like
my
Nebraska
point
or something like that.
That's my point. The offense fell off a cliff last year.
Yeah,
the offense fell off a cliff. This was a bad offense. They went from 31st in 2020, again abbreviated schedule 4-2 in 2020, mm-hmm. all the way down to 104th Ooh. Nationally, which is a huge drop off.
Yeah,
if Northwestern was the answer on the other side of things, you could definitely make a case for Stanford on the offensive side of things. Just really bad. The defense. Also really bad. It was really bad last year. It got worse in 2021.
Yep.
Variety of factors for that. I'm sure we could talk about it if we really wanted to. We don't. What matters is the second order wins total, 2.7 per the SP Plus, had Stanford pretty much right on the number at 3-9. So
yeah.
I think you layer all that in. The recruiting is something we can discuss. But bigger picture, as we move ahead now into 22, this is not an easy schedule for Stanford. It is not an easy schedule for Stanford. Brutal road schedule.
Mm-hmm.
At Washington, at Oregon, at Notre Dame. That's all within the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yep.
Then there's a road tilt later against Utah. Obviously, they play USC pretty early on as well. So yeah. it's stacking up against Stanford making some sort of reclamation project in 2021. They could come on strong late, but they're going to have some work to do early, I think, if they want to prove to anybody that they can get this thing turned around in a good direction.
So they lose both of their running backs who carried the ball the most, who toted the rock the most, and Nathaniel Pete and Austin Jones. Pete transfers to Mizzou and Austin Jones to USC. And the big thing for Stanford is, for Stanford, is year over year, it always seemed like whatever they were, for better or worse, they would get good line play up front on both sides of the ball. They would have a good defense. They would have a good offensive line. They would get guys into the NFL, especially up front on defense, up front on offense. You know, they would develop an interesting running back, be it Bryce Love hitting home runs, be it Christian McCaffrey as one of the all-time, all-purpose greats. And they would find these guys and develop these guys. And they haven't developed a receiver in quite some time. Tight end, they've had guys, you know, most recently like Colby Parkinson was that guy. But they've stopped finding, they've stopped developing, and they've stopped really being able to weaponize specific players on offense. And they would find quarterbacks, but even like since Kevin Hogan.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's been a while. And like they're pulling in 4- and 5-star kids. Like Tanner McKee, I think, was a 5-star quarterback. And he showed flashes, but this was a predictable offense. It was arguably one of the worst defensive lines and defensive fronts in football. Were they the worst run defense in football? They were in that grouping.
They were
pushed
really
around
bad.
A crazy
I can pull
amount.
It up. I can pull it up, but they were very
pull it
bad.
Up.
Yeah,
but
128. 128.
So I'm assuming they were the worst Power Five run defense in America. And it's what Lance Anderson on defense and Tavita Pritchard on offense as coordinators. They retain both of those guys. So David Shaw, another one of those guys who doesn't make a lot of wholesale changes along his coaching staff and doesn't really have the ability to do so via the portal. On the roster. So it's that same idea of turning around that aircraft carrier that, you know, Stanford's in a better place because they can recruit on a much higher level than Northwestern, Vanderbilt, Duke, programs like that. But, man, I don't know. There's a stubborn streak to David Shaw, both in the architecture of the offense and play calling and decision making in those higher leverage moments, that doesn't seem to improve. He won a bunch of close games in 2020, so it doesn't, you know, that didn't seem like there was going to be pressure on his seat after 2020, and they didn't have their starting quarterback against Oregon in that opener because of a, I think it was a false positive that was Davis Mills, I think, received. But I don't know. It's really difficult to see when you look at this roster and you look at what they were or were not able to do on the field, to see them as an 8-4, 9-3 program again anytime soon.
Yeah, the thing to watch on the Stanford front, and it warrants mentioning, Stanford is third in returning production for 2022.
Yep.
So
yep,
bringing back nearly everybody on offense and most of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other teams that we're talking about here are also on that list. We haven't talked about Southern Miss yet, but they're in the top 10. Georgia Southern also brings back a lot. So there are reasons for optimism, I think, with some of these schools. But, you know, Stanford being as high up as they are, really the only Power 5 team that's that high. Can they do anything with it? I don't know. It's been a minute since Stanford was like a real tried and true contender in the Pac-12. So we'll see.
Yeah. And there's kind of a window right now.
There is.
In the North, you have new coach at Washington, new coach at Washington State, new coach at Oregon. Oregon State should be decent enough. Cal has had its own struggles. And then, by the way, the big game's on the road this year. New coach at USC, UCLA sort of, I mean, that game was gettable for Stanford last year. It seemed like at times they had a lead. And, you know, the Arizona schools are very much in flux. You know, Arizona heading in the right direction, Arizona State not. Utah's really strong, but Colorado seems to be a disaster. So the window for Stanford is
there,
relatively open. Yeah, it's just there. A matter of handling their own business and finding those difference makers on both sides of the ball. So there's Stanford. This next team was the only team on our list to win its final two games.
Southern Miss.
Southern Miss is correct.
Thank you, Dan.
Southern Miss, a lot more active in the portal than a lot of these teams, and they have the luxury of having two major programs in their own state, in Ole Miss and Mississippi State, which they very much took advantage of and added a number of Mississippi State players. Last year, it was an interesting team. So it was year one of Will Hall coming in from Tulane. He was the offensive coordinator and pretty well regarded. I remember Oregon interviewing him a couple times for their open job, in which I think that was Joe Moorhead who took it at that stage. But the defense was quietly decent at times. They allowed too many big plays. Their big focus, and it makes sense given the number of junior colleges in the state and in the area, was on adding JC players and adding players via the portal. So they're looking to immediately turn things around. As I mentioned, they won their final two, but last year did feature pretty bad losses. It's hard to go 3-9 and not have a few bad losses, just in terms of who you lose to. Troy, Rice, South Alabama. You know, UTEP was improved, but still not great to lose to the Miners. Middle Tennessee, North Texas, and they do have this year, and which should be a new look team. They travel to Miami and they host Liberty. So tricky early sledding for the Eagles, but Southern Miss, a program that I'm confident can get better quicker than some of these other schools within the context of, you know, who they play and where they play.
Yeah. And also, as I just said, top 10 in college football in terms of returning production.
Yes.
So you can do something with that for sure. And it's a fairly workable schedule. I mean, you mentioned they've got game against Miami on the road, and there's some others here that are certainly problematic, but
yeah,
it's gettable.
Yeah.
It's gettable. They can definitely improve.
Bit of a rotation at quarterback last year, so, and I don't think any of these three guys, Lang, Keys, or Trey Lowe, threw for more touchdowns and interceptions, so a lot of work to be done through the air, but I don't know. Again, I have some optimism with Southern Miss, and I know it's kind of, you know, behind the scenes can be a bit of a screwy place, but it seems like the activity and attention is there. So, yeah, Southern Miss.
Final team here is Duke.
Yeah.
You could tell me in a second what you wanted to say about Duke, but what jumped out at me when I was looking over the Blue Devils, in Duke's case, they lost their last eight.
Yep.
North Carolina, Georgia Tech, Virginia, Wake Forest, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Louisville, Miami. Not the easiest road if you're Duke.
No.
By any stretch, right? But we had talked going into the year, like, is this tire running out of air for David Cutcliffe? Yeah, maybe it's time to move on. Yeah. Ultimately, they did. They're going in the direction of Mike Elko. This is a team that pretty much quit. Pretty much quit.
Yeah.
Second half of the year. If you look at post-game win expectancy, they were nowhere close. The only game in all of those eight where their post-game win expectancy was above a 0%, which I cannot tell you is almost impossible, was Georgia Tech. They lost that game by 4. All the other games, they were pretty much destroyed. They had no chance. So right. The time was right. They move on. They go Mike Elko. Mike Elko is a good hire for Duke.
Definitely. And given his time in the state at Wake Forest and ties to the, you know, finding, you know, high level 3-star kids who can get into Duke and succeed and develop and take time, I think it's a strong hire.
Folks on some of the A&M message boards were betrayed by this. How could he? He's leaving for Duke? Why would he leave for Duke?
Power 5 head coaching job. Yeah.
He could have shot higher than Duke. He could have gotten a better gig if he wanted to than Duke. But like you said, there's a bit of a connection there. He decides ultimately he wants to take that gig. Clearly, Duke's a program that's going to give him time. Mike Elko's been a successful assistant for many, many years now. So, you know, the extent to which he can turn that ship around, turn that aircraft carrier around, remains to be seen. But the time, I think, was right for a fresh start at Duke. And, you know, on both fronts, not just football, but at time of recording, we just saw Coach K's last game.
That's true.
On the basketball side as well. So a whole new era for the two money sports on the men's side of things for Duke.
Yeah, and the expectation isn't there. The expectation for Stanford, given recent results, I think is far more pronounced than it is at Duke, given what David Shaw specifically has been able to accomplish in Palo Alto and Jim Harbaugh before him. Yeah, it's, you know, get to a bowl game sometimes. That's good. That's good at Duke. Yeah, I get the move from Mike Elko. You get a head job in the ACC. You take it. You take it if you've been trying for a job like this. You ever been a cookout, by the way, Ty?
Bit at a cookout or at cookout?
No. The fast food chain in the Southeast, specifically the Carolinas, I think.
No.
Cookout.
No.
It is whatever it lacks in high-level quality, it makes up for and then some in value.
Really?
You can feast for $3.84. You can get, are you a milkshake guy? I know we had the whole thing with Adam Amin way back when.
On occasion. It's not my go-to, but I'm not anti-milkshake.
You can get, there's like 30 flavors available at Cookout. It's a huge menu. Everything is cheap. If you are hungry and you don't have a bunch of cash, not a sponsor could be. I just say this because I've only been to Durham once and I ate at Cookout and I was thrilled with the experience. So maybe that's why Mike Elko went back.
Could be for Cookout. Yeah, who knows?
Could be for Cookout. Yeah, Duke is, I don't know. They're in a nice position just because the expectations are so low. And David Cutcliffe did hire pretty well. You remember it was Cutcliffe who brought Jim Knowles, I think, onto the biggest stage at that time for him and got hired away by Oklahoma State at the time. But I did see, I think David Cutcliffe might be heading to Texas in like an advisor type role, same way that Gary Patterson's being hired there. And maybe can't hurt that Cutcliffe's relationship with the Manning family could come handy with the number one quarterback recruit in the country, currently somebody with that last name. But yeah, Cutcliffe did a lot of good things for them. He's well regarded, but it wasn't going to be any sort of short, medium, or long-term answer for the Blue Devils.
Yeah, and to your point about expectations, Duke's sort of starting over at a bunch of positions. That they're near the bottom in terms of that returning production number. So it really is going to be a near full rebuild for Mike Elko starting in year one. He can build in his image.
Do you know who is awesome? Mateo Durant.
Yeah.
And nobody... us included, we didn't talk about it because it was just he wasn't playing in meaningful games at all. And I have no idea if this is going to be the case. I know nothing about the draft. I know nothing about the NFL. I just know that guys like Mateo Durant, who are able to succeed on terrible teams, can be guys who are, you know, free agents or, you know, drafted in the 6th, 7th round And especially at the running back position where value doesn't mean much, you're like, this guy just ran for 1,400 yards for the Steelers? For the Viking? What? Cool. That's the kind of guy I think Mateo Durant can be from what I've seen of him.
Rush for 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns. Not a bad year.
Yeah.
Not a bad year. Okay. That does it, Dan. So
that's it.
We went through all 12 teams. I don't know how many I got right. Maybe 5.
Yeah.
That went 3-9 in 2021. Hopefully all of them get better. We have no reason to root against them. But as we said, going through, some have greater obstacles than others. We're going to continue doing this. So the next time around, next month.
We are the kings of losers.
We are the kings of losers.
Yeah.
4-8 next month, we can talk through. There will be more teams for us.
Who
to
do
discuss.
We have? Who are the highlights?
I don't have it in front of me. But I did look briefly, and there are more 4-8 teams.
I did check. Lehigh and Lafayette went 3-8.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have any weigh-ins about any of those teams. Here are the 4-8 teams, Ty. 4-8 FBS teams from 2021. Are you ready?
I'm ready, please.
Navy.
Okay.
Rice.
Yep.
Bowling Green. Buffalo. USC. Colorado. Texas State. Louisiana Monroe. And that's it.
So there are fewer teams.
I think there might be fewer. Yeah.
Okay. Damn. All right. Never mind.
That's Murder's Row.
Dan, this was fun. I appreciate
always
your research as ever. We would appreciate everybody stopping on by the website, solidverbal.com. That's where you can find all of our links. Verballers.com right now is where it's really popping off. I mean, geez,
correct.
We've got extra nuggets. We've got early access. We've got Brew and A. Later this week, we're going to do a 2-part Brew and A, part that goes public, the other part that is private for Verballers only at verballers.com. You can go on out to the Patreon. You can also find the awesome show that we did talking about the James Webb Space Telescope and all things astronomy, Daniel.
Oh my God. It was so fun.
The most fun I've had doing an interview in quite some time. So verballers.com is where you can find that premium content. Mm-hmm. And don't forget again to follow on social media.
What was the most fun before then? Before
it might have been Houston Nut on the toilet.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, I got nothing else.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, thank you so much for downloading, listening, supporting, and playing along at home. We will be back a little later on this week for an answer some of your questions. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.